All right, everybody. Really, really exciting interview. Really exciting guest. Please don't go anywhere. Reverse Heart Disease Naturally Summit is back for you. But today we bring you Dr. Amy Donine. And you may know her, you may not know her. But when we're done with this, you're going to say, how did I possibly not know her? This is a Reverse Heart Disease Naturally Summit. And Dr. Donine in Spokane, Washington, may have actually had hands-on with more patients proven to reverse their heart and vascular disease than almost any clinician in the United States. And I want to introduce her formally, but she will tell us that the goal of reversing heart disease is real, and it should be one we strive for, but this pathetic, anemic medical system just waits you're half dead. I'm going to stop editorializing. So I am reading Dr. Donine's biography from an amazing book we're going to talk about. But Dr. Amy Donine, Doctor of Nursing Practice, is an international leader, and that's true, in the prevention of heart attack, strokes, diabetes, and chronic diseases such as dementia. She and Dr. Brad Bale co-founded the Bale-Donine Method in 2001, a medical approach proven to identify, stabilize, and reverse arterial disease. She and Dr. Bale have been called disease detectives. Man, that is so good. Checking for hidden signs of arterial disease. She has many academic appointments. She has a beautiful new facility for her heart attack and stroke prevention center in Spokane, Washington. People fly in from all over the place to see her. And then, of course, a lot of us are doing telemedicine. She's also my mentor because I'm a graduate in 2015 of the Bale-Donine Method. My certificate is proudly in my office lobby and waiting room. That's a true story. Your books
are. That was in 2015, huh?
How time flies when you're on fire. On fire with the desire to help people at all. So welcome so much, Dr. Donine.
Thank you so much, Dr. Khan. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. And as I said, it is not possible to have a summit called Reverse Heart Disease Naturally without having either you or your co-founder and also awesome physician. He's not available in the same city as you usually, Dr. Brad Bale. You are the authentic, you're like the rock that proves that the earth is billions of years old because you have seen it. So let's start right there. Okay. I mean, in 2001, you and Dr. Brad Bale set up a collaborative clinic and a method, the Bale-Donine Method, to demonstrate that arterial disease can be stabilized and reversed. And there are skeptics that say that's nonsense. So just go on a riff and talk about 22 years of experience that it's real to stabilize and it's real to reverse arterial disease.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, that's exactly how it happened. When we started working together 20 plus years ago, it was a matter of realizing, and you've talked about this over the years, that tools like coronary calcium scanning and then 2001 carotid IMT started to come into play, which are ways to find disease in the arterial bed before someone has a heart attack to prove that they have it. So that concept in itself was landmark. And so that's kind of where we started, was we wanted to find out who had disease and who didn't, and then look at the why they had disease and amazingly treat the why, see the disease stabilize. So fast forward to around 2008, where we started to collect our data. And at the time we were working with Texas Tech, and we had data in 576 patients that we had been following for about 8 years. And at the time we were using carotid intima media thickness as our endpoint, which can evaluate both the calcified or echogenic harder plaque and also the more unstable plaque. And so we wanted to see what was happening. And so over that 8 year time period, in 576 patients, we saw a linear trend down of arterial thickness as documented by the carotid IMT. And we also saw stability of the plaque burden. And then as we were continuing with our clinical practice, the data was pointing that it's really not the mean IMT that we want to go for. We want to ask the question, can we actually stabilize the plaque? And so we worked with Steve Jones at Johns Hopkins, and we said, hey, let's look at the fact, can we actually stabilize the plaque? Can you treat somebody on an individual N of one and take plaque that's soft and inflammatory and over time actually stabilize it? And we had enough data in that data set, 324 patients, that over a 5-year time period in 100% of patients, the plaque became echogenic and stable. And it was kind of this aha moment to say, and even Dr. Jones asked, how are you doing that? That's not normal. That's not normal. And our answer to that was pretty simple and yet pretty robust. And that was, it's bigger than just our cholesterol, our blood pressure, and if we're exposed to nicotine. It has to do with everything. It has to do with lifestyle, psychosocial stress. It has to do with insulin resistance, vitamin deficiencies, genetically inherited lipid abnormalities like lipoprotein A, so many factors that aren't part of the guidelines. And so that's kind of how we got to where we are today. And the two books is to tell that story.
Bunch of things just to follow up. Number one, you and Dr. Brad Bale have authored at least two incredible books, one called Beat the Heart Attack Gene. I love it. It's out in my office. It stresses particularly a genetic inheritance called NP21, but it covers your comprehensive risk management program at the Bale Dineen Method. And your book, your new book, which is almost a year old when everybody's listening, Healthy Heart, Healthy Brain, absolutely wonderful update and expanded knowledge base, thicker book. These are must reads. But if, you know, people that were just listening to your eloquent, I mean, you've had a whole day in the clinic and you're just like I am on fire because you know things that the average clinician doesn't really even think about. What do you have plaque? What kind of plaque? Can we make your plaque friendlier and less dangerous to you so you have a better life? I mean, you're a better life doc. I'm a better life doc, but it's cardiovascular disease that so often interrupts that. So you're talking about sophisticated, I just want to make sure the audience gets it. Whether or not we make the plaque go away like some magical Drano, which is not so easy, we can take higher risk plaque, and that's usually the non-calcified plaque, whether it's in the carotid or the heart or other. We can make it stable, lower risk, and largely calcified plaque. And you're using carotid intimal medial thickness ultrasound, a really simple test, but so underused. And you document it and you see it. I think you said 100% of the academic series you had, you saw improvements in the carotid plaque characterization. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to warn people, if you were to walk into your internist, your cardiologist, your preventive doc and said, I want a carotid intimal medial thickness ultrasound, it's simple, they're usually going to hear the answer, it's not available, which is so sad and so unfortunate. It's available in my clinic and you guys have published, you know, on hundreds and hundreds. It's, you know, basically as invaluable a tool as a stethoscope. If you're into, you know, precision medicine like you are and sure. I am, and the audience is hungry to hear about, I mean, is it expanding in Spokane at least, or it's still, you're probably the only center in your city offering it?
Well, it is expanding. It's gaining more traction, certainly. But the challenge we have is making sure the data is reproducible. And it is accessible in pretty much any city. If people know what to ask for, and there's service companies that come in and do that. But the interesting thing is that I want the audience to understand is that 99% of plaque grows in the artery wall. It doesn't grow in the area where blood flows, where we can just wave at it and see it. It blocks the blood flow when there's a problem. So using technology that actually looks at the wall of the artery, such as carotid IMT or coronary calcium scan and other tools that are looking at imaging of the arteries, is very acceptable and it's inexpensive. That's the thing. We're talking tests that are under $200 that can be life-saving. And one of the things you mentioned that I think is important is when we set out to write the first book in 2014, we had a long pause to figure out who are we writing this for? Because yes, I've had a busy day, but it's so exciting. We need to talk about this. We realized that we need to write it to the patient. We need to write it to the healthcare consumer because the healthcare consumer is going to demand change. So while these scientific thoughts and topics seem complex, they're really not when we articulate them in a way and use patient stories and really understand them, all based in evidence. And the first book was really looking at ischemic stroke prevention, heart attack prevention, you know, the big guys, right? The leading cause of death and disability. And then that was in 2014. And then come 2017, we realized, you know, I think the bigger benefit of what we're doing, yes, preventing strokes and heart attacks, but you know what it is? It's protecting all the tiny little arteries, the 30,000 little tiny capillaries that are no bigger than a human hair. And if we can protect those like the others, which we're going to do by default, by the way, we can prevent the diseases of aging that claim our independence, like memory loss, vision, chronic kidney disease, peripheral vascular disease, erectile dysfunction, all the things that claim our quality of life. And so the second book was necessary to articulate what we have learned between the first book and the second book, leading to the fact that it's really about oxidative stress, looking at all the causes of oxidative stress, treating the why, and seeing the disease stabilize. And it's possible, even on people that have had a tremendous cardiovascular history with stents and bypass, you can actually pause and say, why did you have that first stent? And you know, Dr. Khan, sometimes it's perceived that it's so complicated. And oftentimes I find clinically that the little things are missed, like the diagnosis of sleep apnea or periodontal disease or an endodontic tooth lesion or lifestyle, which you are so profoundly, you have that covered hands down, but, and using genetics to be very precise in our drug selection if we need it, in our lifestyle suggestions, and really looking at the end of one, that individual wonderful patient.
Couldn't be more excited to hear that from you. So there's so many areas that you and your co-partner, Dr. Brad Bale, have innovated in these two books. And I just want to quote from your most recent book, and I love this, and I would, you know, going to paint this in my lobby. To find out which patients are in cardiovascular danger, you need to look at their arteries, not just their risk factors. You can steal this from me because I use the short form called test, not guess. And I didn't create that. I picked that up. It's not trademarked. But you said it too. You're looking at arteries. And for people listening that say, look at, you know, these screening companies or my local hospital will do a carotid ultrasound. But you're talking about a specific test looking at the arterial wall. There's a difference from the typical insurance-covered carotid ultrasound that an internist might order and what you and Dr. Bale are offering at your advanced heart attack stroke prevention clinic, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, like I said, the plaque grows here and the quality of the plaque is assessed here. And so to use a test that just limits our vision at blood flow, we're not going to see what's going on with the quality of the plaque itself. You know, one thing going back to what you said on test, not guess, I love that you've had that. And I think of that often because it's an expression, it's a statement that you've had for several years and it's really, really good. But we had a paper published last year that really challenged the current system of putting people in two categories because that's what's done right now. Primary prevention means someone has not had a heart attack or stroke. Secondary prevention means they have, and that's it. So our call out is to say, let's put people in three camps. Primary prevention means we've looked at all the areas we can safely and effectively get to, the carotids, the coronaries, the aorta, the arteries at the top of the leg. We've looked and we don't find any plaque. Well, that we want, our goal for a lifetime for that patient is to remain in primary prevention, like you. Secondary prevention are people who we look and they've have plaque in their arteries. They probably don't know it because no one has come to me in 20 years and said, Dr. Doneen, I think I'm growing fatty streaks in the wall of my artery. No, because you don't feel it. But if someone is secondary prevention, then what's our life goal? To make sure they don't get in that third chair, which means they've had a heart attack, they've had a stent, they've had a stroke to prove that they have plaque. And in that population, which we claim to be tertiary, we want to stop recidivism, because the disease can be stopped. So if we simply say and ask ourselves, if you're listening to this, well, I wonder if I'm in the first chair or the second chair. I know I'm not in the third chair because I've not had a heart attack or stroke. But the only way you know if you're primary or secondary in the way we define it is you've got to, as you say, test, not guess.
Right. Well, wonderful. And then again, you guys have a method, you know, that you've developed, you've published, you've written about it, the Bale-Dohnine method. You use this acronym called EDFROG in both books. And just so that everybody knows, just tell us the bullet points of what that stands
for. Yeah, absolutely. So it's an acronym that really kind of ties in what our method is. So education is number one. That's the E, to educate ourselves and be evidence-based in everything that we do and share the knowledge and educate our patients on what really causes a heart attack or a stroke and share that educational knowledge, number one. Number two is disease. That's what the D stands for. Look for disease. And if someone has plaque, monitor it on a regular basis so that we know the plaque is getting safer. It's healing, and that's what we want. So the F stands for fire or inflammation, or more recently we've termed it oxidative stress. That really is a key factor. So fire, monitor the inflammatory labs on a regular basis. And then the R is huge. The R stands for root causes. Looking at all the reasons why someone might have plaque. And like I said earlier, maybe it's sleep apnea. Maybe it's periodontal issues. Maybe it's psychosocial factors. Maybe it's genetics. Maybe it's lipoprotein A. Maybe it's air pollution. All of those root causes that have a cause and effect, look for them and lay all the cards on the table and treat them. The O stands for optimal goals. And that means individualize. It's not aggressive. It means what's best for you might not be best for someone else, and really be individualized in your care and the care that we give, and that's possible. And then the G stands for genetics. We use genetics for a lot of reasons. We use pharmacogenetics to understand how someone is going to metabolize treatment. And we use genetics to identify lifetime risk of things like heart attack, stroke, aneurysms. And we set screening guidelines based on that. So, and we also use genes to look at how people might best receive lifestyle advice even. So yeah, it's really an acronym that, or an architecture that we put evidence-based medicine into and use that directly in our clinical practices.
Yeah. And people that are listening will want to get one or both these books and study this method, because you can understand it even if you're, you know, a lay member of the public concerned or known to have heart disease, maybe primary, secondary, tertiary, as you just laid out a beautiful structure there. But you do want to study this because it's very thoughtful, and it's actually in the medical literature. Dr. Dohnine and Bale have taken the time to publish this so that doctors around the world can read, learn, and put this into practice. Mm-hmm. And they have huge training numbers that they've accomplished. We'll talk about that in a minute. So another innovation that I give you guys credit for is really emphasizing what you guys call red flags. And again, we can't go over every one, but you specifically stress, you know, red flags for unknown heart and vascular disease in women. And just mention a few of them that you think the listening audience might not ever even have considered.
Oh, absolutely. So thank you for asking that, because February is Women's Heart Month. So it's nice to specialize on that. But red flags are, they don't have a cause and effect. Here's an example. So if a young woman experiences migraines, we know that she has a significant increased risk in her lifetime of also suffering a stroke. We don't know why, though, exactly. Is it the pathology of the migraine? Is it the fact that it's affected her sleep pattern? But we know that migraines are a red flag, and that individual needs to be treated and evaluated for cardiovascular risk. Another one for women would be preeclampsia. You know, pregnancy is a wonderful time to, it puts the body under stress, a wonderful stress, but it tells us a story. So if a woman has preeclampsia, if a woman has hypertension or high blood pressure during pregnancy, if she has diabetes during her pregnancy, those factors when the pregnancy is over are sometimes forgotten. But do you know any of those factors suggest increased risk throughout their lifetime of diabetes, sustained hypertension, blood clots in the legs, and even strokes? And so it's using these red flags and the knowledge. And like you said, in our books, both of them, they are written to the public. So a whole chapter on all of these unique red flags, and it's just, and people should not feel guilty if they have a red flag. Maybe it's an autoimmune, maybe it's, you know, any sort of arthritic condition that we need to recognize might place people on increased risk. So I think just knowing that is very helpful, and recognizing and not being afraid to look in the mirror and realize that we all have risk, and to get treated effectively.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the ways you identify a red flag for silent atherosclerotic disease is you guys are focused on a couple of things most clinicians aren't, and one is certainly insulin resistance. And mm-hmm. you still order an old test called a 2-hour oral glucose tolerance test.
We chug
the very thing we tell our patients not to chug, pure sugar water, and then monitor, you know, their blood sugar for 2 hours, maybe their blood sugar and their insulin levels for 2 hours in the blood. I mean, tell us why you hold on to what many clinicians would call maybe even an out-of-date test. And what do you find in your clinic by doing that?
Yeah, great question. One thing I will say is insulin resistance is beyond a red flag. It's actually a root cause. And one of the most common root causes that we see is missed when we see patients for the first time, especially those with known heart disease. So how do we diagnose it? Well, we have options. We can look at a fasting blood sugar, and if that's elevated but not in diabetic range, we say, gosh, you probably have some prediabetes. If someone has an A1C or a 3-month average of blood sugar, which is often advocated for, that can be a indication that they have prediabetes. But why do we put people through the agonizing test of drinking 75 grams of glucose and then testing both the 1 hour and the 2 hour blood sugar? And like you say, insulin oftentimes as well. It really gives us an indication of not only how long someone has been insulin resistant, it really gives us a real life example of how an individual's body responds to that glucose load. And really, Dr. DeFronzo has done most of the work for this. And way back, even in 2010, he looked at what is most predictive. Is it the fasting, the A1C, the 1 hour, and the 2 hour? And really, the 1 hour, by the time it jumps up to 150, there is a 13-fold increased risk that individual is going to be flat out diabetic over the next 7.5 years. And by the time the 2-hour glucose gets above 120, not 140, there's also a significant risk that there's beta cell decline. And it really is a true fact that the sensitivity and specificity of A1C levels is about 50%. So someone could have a normal A1C, and that's a 3-month average, I should say. Challenging that pancreas is the best way we can uncover this and make sure that they never, I consider it a personal clinical failure if one of my patients was ever to become diabetic. We have 20 years to identify it before the beta cells get so wiped out that they're type 2 diabetic. So we really have this wonderful window of opportunity, and it's so often not done.
Excellent. So we've talked about, you know, you go way beyond the usual approach to looking at vessels. You go way beyond the approach identifying root causes. You go way beyond the approach for these subtle red flags and sometimes testing for them. You really have taught probably more physicians about the oral cardiac connection, the health of the gums, the health of root canals, the health of cracked teeth. We did have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Doug Thompson, dentist, is a graduate of your Vail d'Onin program, as well as starting up his own integrative dental network, as you know. So we've talked about it, but I mean, very few clinicians have your experience, and yours is greater than mine. That patient with, you know, on fire with inflammation, and really you can't get it under control. How often do you really say, aha, eureka, we found it by cone beam tomography, by advanced periodontal evaluation? I mean, how often does that come up? Is it a fairly frequent event that the mouth is the source of the root fire?
Yeah, and they're all intertwined. So you know, you look at periodontal disease, and 70% of people over age 50 have some form of periodontal disease. And if we equate periodontal disease and understand that it's really a chronic bacterial infection, that certain bacteria that live in the gum line, and they have names, AA, PG, TF, TD, these dangerous bacteria actually have data to demonstrate that they can cause plaque in the artery wall. And we had a paper published in 2017 that really looked at that. And we used a model called the atherogenic triad to demonstrate this for the first time to show causality. And it's not part of the problem. And I'm sure Dr. Thompson mentioned this too. The old way to diagnose periodontal disease is visually an exam, which is important, but it's if your gums depths are, you know, bleeding and over 3 centimeter or millimeters, not centimeters, millimeters, then you have periodontal disease. But if you shift gears and say, well, do I have any of these dangerous bacteria? Because those are the ones that we have the data to show the causality. And then to your question about an endodontic abscess, Dr. Pesci was the first one to actually publish that. And he looked at patients in the emergency room who were having a heart attack, 222 of them, in fact. And he asked them and got their permission to analyze the clot, the thrombus that was blocking the flow of blood. And he asked them and evaluated them while, you know, in the ER, do you have any mouth pain? Do you have any teeth that hurt, sensitive, cold, whatever? And the answer was no. So what he found is about 50% of these people who were in for acute MI had endodontic bacteria within the clot itself, suggesting that an endodontic lesion could be the causal factor of a plaque rupture and subsequent thrombus. So I don't think any hospital that calls themselves a heart hospital is doing a good enough job unless they are partnering with an oral health specialist to evaluate endodontic lesions with 3D imagery so that we really can see those, and also working with an oral health specialist to understand the bacteria in the mouth.
Wow, powerful statements. Mm-hmm. I want to circle back. Again, you have a bale donine method, and obviously you're seeing important advances in arterial health, cooling down the fire, converting to more stable calcified plaque in heart and carotid arteries, because you're intervening, and your program does depend on pharmacologic agents, things like statins, things like blood pressure medication. You've got very tight goals for people at risk. Now, one of the unique things of the bale donine method is that you still use a diabetic drug that many people have never heard of called pioglitazone in some patients. And many people have heard of metformin, or everybody's going crazy right now about Ozempic and the rest. Sure. Why do you hang on to pioglitazone? And I know everything you do has a scientific basis, but what have you seen in your patients by using that very inexpensive oral anti-diabetic drug?
Yeah. One thing I like to say is that all drugs are poison. So if we don't have to use them, we won't. But in some people that have insulin resistance to the degree that even an optimal lifestyle is not going to keep them safe, and there's still residual inflammation from the insulin resistance, what pioglitazone does is it sensitizes the body to use the insulin. It's an insulin sensitizer. So it reduces diabetes risk by 72%. And it also has data that it can stabilize the necrotic core of plaque. And that was done by coronary angiography and coronary imaging to show you can actually stabilize that plaque if insulin resistance is one of the root causes. While we have, and it's not safe for everybody, because you can get some fluid retention. So if someone has a heart muscle that's enlarged, we're not going to use it. It has to be properly selected for sure. But when we look at other technologies like the GLP-1s, which is the one you just mentioned, Ozempic, or we look at metformin, which is a great drug as well. We use that as well oftentimes, but when we're talking about truly treating the insulin resistance pharmaceutically, pioglitazone really has that ability to do so. And part of it is it can stop even the conversion of secretory muscle cells to trap cholesterol within the artery wall. So it has these pleiotropic benefits that are really, really powerful.
So just going back to really my first point, if anybody has any doubt that heart disease plaque and carotid disease plaque and sexual organ disease plaque and peripheral artery leg disease plaque can be at least stabilized to lower risk and maybe actually diminished, you'd say, not true. I've seen it hundreds, if not thousands of times, right?
Oh, it's very true. I mean, it's very true. We can identify plaque. We can understand why someone has plaque. We can monitor the plaque activity. And if we treat the why, we see the inflammation go down and we see the disease stabilize. Those are my expectations for my patients. And if I don't see that, it's pausing together and say, what are we missing? Have we looked at the bacteria in your mouth? How's your stress? How's your sleep? Have you had a cone beam x-ray? Do you have some inflammation from a tooth? Do you have gut dysbiosis? Really taking the mystery out of this whole thing and identifying the why. And that probably the biggest thing I would say is the standard of care is missing so many of the whys, and they're not that complex and complicated. Yes, lipids matter. Yes, blood pressure matters. Yes, don't expose your body to nicotine. All of those are important, but there's so much more.
Tell us where one a clinician's watching and says, I want to sign up and take the Bale Dunin Method course. What's the website for that?
Oh, thank you for asking. So it's just simple. It's baledonin.com, and it's Bale Dunin, Donen.com. And right. You can
there is an online version as well as a live.
There conference. Is, yeah. And we're starting, since COVID taught us how to talk online, we're now doing hybrid. So people can come if they want to come, or they can watch. And it's a 17-hour CME and a CE program, because we invite all specialists to come. At our last one we just had in Houston last month, we had a pediatrician, we had several dentists, hygienists, cardiologists, internal medicine, family practice, a doctor of nursing practices, ARNPs. It bringing to the table, everyone comes with a different knowledge base. And to think that one specialty or one backdrop is going to treat such a grand disease that affects 30,000 miles of vessels, we're going to miss the boat. So we welcome everyone to the table and we learn from one another. And I think that's important.
Actually, I believe the rarest job in America is to be a preventive medicine clinician. There is so much opportunity. So I'm not worried that you're training my competition. I welcome it. It's such a need from all the specialties you mentioned. And the fact that you integrate dentists into your audience is fantastic. I want to come see you in Spokane. Number one, do you do telemedicine in some states?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we do.
But I want to come visit you. What's the website for your clinic?
So the website is thepreventioncenter.com.
Okay, that's pretty simple. Am I going to wait 6 months to get in to see you because you're such a big kahuna?
Well, there is a waiting list, but sign up because 6 months happens like that.
And I will say one of my colleagues, an interventional cardiologist, jumped ship like I jumped ship about 8 years ago. And that interventional cardiologist is now your colleague in your clinic. And what a wonderful thing to see. I briefly owned the trademark Prevent Not Stent, and my hospital got so mad at me, I didn't renew it. But Dr. Pierre is pretty much living the same path, career that I took to. And I just got to finish up with the last, you know, remarkable thing about your clinic. If it doesn't work, what's your policy that you've almost never needed to activate? But I want people to understand how confident you and Dr. Brad Bale are. So just tell everybody, Amazon-like policy at your preventive clinic.
Yeah. So we are a fee-for-service clinic. And so if someone was to have an atherothrombotic event, a heart attack or an ischemic stroke on our watch, we would give them back the monies that they paid to us to prevent that during that year. And it's not a legal issue. We do follow the standard of care. We just don't think it's good enough. So, and it's a partnership. So working with patients and knowing that we've got skin in the game as well, it really increases that compliance. And it also improves the care that they're getting because they deserve to be healthy and they work hard to be here. So I respect that.
And out of the thousands of patients you and Dr. Bale have taken care of, you've actually had to activate that policy like under five times, right?
Yeah, I think it's two actually, and right. Both people are fine. And one, the one that I have was a very unique, interesting situation. I won't go into, but he never did cash his check. He's a dentist, and he has it framed on his wall. So, so that was one, yeah. And he's still a patient.
Where I grew up in suburban Detroit, we called the policy like that chutzpah. So as you know, you can't be any more confident in your ability to help people than to actually offer what you offer. So I know you've had a long day. You probably got work to do. You got charts to do. I don't want to keep you any longer, but I think the audience has just been blown away that there is this force for over two decades, two books, academic papers, thousands of patients. And they need to go out there and buy those books right now and study this up. And I would say that it was very well invested money.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Khan. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Well, we fight the same fight in different parts of the country. And God knows we need more soldiers on the ground with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much.